Welcome back to Through the Word. I'm your host, Peyton Jones, and today we'll be in 1 Kings chapter 9, where God has a little chat with Solomon. In this chapter, we're told that God meets with Solomon and appears to him a second time. Remember, the first time was when Solomon was asked, "What do you really want?" To which he answered, "Wisdom." But this time, God comes and gives Solomon a little bit of wisdom. After he builds the temple, God appears. Now, God's response to Solomon building the temple isn't, "Hey, dude, thanks for building me a totally righteous, killer, tubular house, dude. I'm totally stoked on it, man." That'd be how a dude responds. But God's sobering reminder gets Solomon away from the entitlement he could have felt. Solomon could have been, "Hey, like, God, I just spent over a decade building you a house, and you must be totally grateful to have a dude like me around. Boy, you sure got a good deal, God, when you saved me." But instead, God says to Solomon, "Solomon, nothing's changed. What matters is that you walk before me." God says, "I have heard the prayer and plea you have made before me. I've consecrated this temple, which you have built, by putting my name there forever. My eyes and my heart will always be there. But as for you, if you walk before me faithfully with integrity of heart and uprightness, as David your father did, and do all I command and observe my decrees and laws, I will establish your royal throne over Israel forever. As I promised David your father when I said you shall never fail to have a successor on the throne to Israel. But if you or your descendants turn away from me and do not observe the commands and decrees I've given you and go off and serve other gods and worship them, then I will cut off Israel from the land I have given them. I will reject this temple I have consecrated for my name. Israel will then become a byword and an object of ridicule among all peoples. This temple will become a heap of rubble. All who pass by will be appalled and will scoff and say, 'Why has the Lord done such a thing like this to this land and this temple?' People will answer, 'Because they have forsaken the Lord their God, who brought their ancestors out of Egypt, and they embraced other gods, worshiping and serving them. That is why the Lord brought all this disaster upon them.'" There's a saying, "Oh, how the mighty fall," and none was truer than to see this temple taken apart stone by stone and melted down to extract the gold. And that's exactly what happened twice with the temples that we have built in Jerusalem. But it doesn't matter if you give the Lord $1 billion or you give him nothing. God is no respecter of persons. He's not obligated to us ever. Rather, we are always obligated to him. You see, God is not like a genie, like we freed him from the lamp and gave him something. No, he's always the one to whom we owe everything to. And when we give, it's with that perspective. All the success, the gold, everything and anything that's mine really is his. All the success, gold, or material wealth are all owned by God and therefore owed to God. They all trace their origin in his blessing, and they were all connected with obeying him anyways. When Solomon understands that it's God who blessed him as he blessed his father, that keeps him on the straight and narrow for a time. But sometimes we lose that perspective. That's why Jesus said that after we've done everything that we were commanded, we should say, "We are only your humble servants. We have only done our duty." Solomon had to walk next to God and walk with God as good as the next man. He didn't get any special privileges because he was king. In fact, he had a greater responsibility, if anything else. God didn't owe him. You know, sometimes preachers end up thinking that God owes them. We call that entitlement. They think, "I've brought so many people to you, God. Boy, God sure is lucky to have me." And as stupid as that sounds, it's often what gets them and us into trouble. As a minister, no matter how many people I lead to Jesus, I should be getting on my knees, kissing the ground, and praising God that I got to be a part of leading even one soul to Jesus. Like David said, better to be a doorkeeper in the house of my God than to live 1,000 years away from it. Remember when you first came to Jesus, the thought of doing even one little thing for him was just an incredible, mind-blowing reality? I'll never forget the time that I was asked to do the first chore for the church after youth group. My minister handed me a vacuum and said, "Peyton, if you want to be a pastor, it starts like this." And sure enough, I vacuumed that floor with so much joy, I can't even tell you. And the whole time I kept thinking, I get to vacuum the floor for God. I couldn't believe it. There's not a time that I come to record for Through the Word, and I still can't believe that I get to do this. God doesn't owe me anything. The privilege, trust me, is all mine. And I praise him and thank him for it. Well, in the next section, we hit what the Bible translators have titled Solomon's Other Activities. What seems small and miscellaneous to Solomon's life would be huge in ours. Like, for example, giving away 12 cities. Like, I don't know about you, but in my life, giving away 12 cities, I don't even have a big enough box to put that in. Okay, I mean, they were cities like Stanton, California, Oxnard, and Stockton, Barstow maybe even, which does house, by the way, the largest McDonald's in the world, so we can't completely knock it. But if you're from California, you know what I'm talking about. Every state has those cities that people think, let's just drive through them. Nobody ever really stops in them unless they need gas really bad on the interstate. But these weren't really cities that you wanted. If you're from these cities I mentioned, I'm sorry, I mean, I totally slagged off your town, but that's how Hiram felt about the cities that Solomon gives him in this chapter. Now, he calls them Kabul, which means good for nothing. Solomon, by the way, owed Hiram a debt for all the gold that he needed to finish his palace, and Solomon didn't have a way to pay him. Apparently, scholars say, the solution was simple. I'll give you 12 cities. But we see Solomon's wisdom slipping a bit here because he doesn't give him good cities. He doesn't give him the Huntington Beaches or the Carlsbads or the San Diego type cities. You know, cities where I live. No, Hiram was not pleased at all. He didn't want the Stocktons and the Barstows. He wanted the San Diego. But scholars suggest Solomon was eventually able to pay off his debt and get those cities back, as it says at the end of the chapter, that he was able to build them up again. He most likely got that money from the Queen of Sheba, who paid tribute to Solomon for his wisdom, but that doesn't come until the next chapter. Nevertheless, the chapter ends with a strange alliance between Hiram and the Pharaoh of Egypt. It was like Solomon was in over his head and he lost his mind. These strange alliances would eventually be his undoing. Even though verse 25 tells us 3 times a year Solomon sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings on the altar he had built for the Lord, burning incense before the Lord along with them, and so fulfilled the temple obligations. Again, it would be his Egyptian wife that would lead his descent into paganism. Immediately after, and it's very telling, that where the passage tells us that God appears and says, "Be careful to keep walking before me," it may be that just a little bit of presumption, a little bit of entitlement crept in, and Solomon started to think, "I've done so much for God. I can let these things slide. Surely God will too." You know, when Jesus told the parable of the prodigal son, the older brother at the end was the punchline. He thought that God owed him something too. And that gets us into all kinds of trouble. Read 1 Kings chapter 9 today, and as you do, remember, God owes us nothing.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.